Well, I mean, you know, it's good to probably do a show at some point during the playoffs again, huh?
Who are you? Call the police. Security. Security.
It's been about a week since we did a show. Various and sundry things behind the scenes. Not to be any concern of all of our dear listeners. It's this kind of
Greg and I had a horrible fight. Greg and I had a horrible disagreement. We vowed to never speak to each other again.
Yeah.
You know, I insulted his fiance. He insulted my wife. It was ugly.
It was really ugly.
I insulted his dog. I called it a cat. Oh, man. Bad scene. Sorry,
exactly.
Sneakers. I apologize.
And I figured that was a threat on Sneakers' life. I figured that he was putting the call out for the Stouffville cat murderer to come down to New York City and ply his trade.
it's been pretty quiet from the last few years.
No decapitations.
No, very good. No, it's clever. No, cats have all kept their heads. It was like five, just random five cats had heads rolling down Main Street and then gone. Just vanished. Boom. Jack the Ripper. And I just like did a little talk about this in Stouffville now for centuries. Gonzo.
Truth be told, we were in talks behind the scenes with people, and those talks took a while, and didn't necessarily produce the result that we were looking for. But that's okay. Everything's fine.
Still talking. How about that?
We
were in talks, and we're still in talks.
The talks continue
on the podcast.
Talks continue. So it necessitated us taking a little bit of time away from MVSW.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of one of my favorite Mitch Hedberg lines. I used to do drugs. I still do, but I used to too.
It reminds me of when Scott Gomez held out of the Devils camp, and then Lou Lamoriello wouldn't let him on the U.S. National team. That's what it reminds me of.
Holy smokes. By the way, just pause on Lou for a second. Everybody in Toronto now, after the Morgan Riley and Nazem Kadri contracts, are really starting to see. You know, now once upon a time was Lou in a small market, all due respect, Wish. It was Lou in a small market with a smaller budget working his wizardry. Now in the large market, you know, the largest market in the entire NHL, you're really seeing Lou Lamoriello take it to the next level. And it's spectacular. Like, is he behaving like a guy in his early 70s? Like, no, not even close.
No.
It's like, if you don't want to do what Lou does, you go to what we now call Robida Island, where we don't ever hear from you again. You're gone.
AKA Vladimir Malakhov Island, AKA Dan McGillis Island. But here, I'll correct one thing on you. Like, if you want to call the Devils a small market team, that's fine, because I think that they obviously are in the shadow of the Rangers, and in some cases the shadow of the Flyers too, when it comes to, you know, the availability of sponsorship dollars and fan base dollars and all that other stuff. But the Devils would frequently have one of the highest payrolls in the league. It's just that what you saw in the Kadri and Riley deals is Lou at his best and is the quintessential Lamoriello, which is the drinking Lou's Kool-Aid, if you will, of his management style, which is to sign guys for lower numbers than you believe they'd be able to get in a different context. And that's specifically true for Kadri, who I think could be seen as a number two center on any number of teams in this league and is getting UFA years eaten up in that deal, and yet the cap hit came in
four.
So low. Oh, my God.
He bought four UFA years. He bought four That's UFA crazy. Years at $4.5 million, which is spectacular.
Yeah.
Even if he ends up being like a third-line center as a UFA, even that price tag is fine, which I don't think. I think he's a second-line player. But even still, even if he is a third, that price tag is totally fine. You bought four UFA years. Now, it's interesting, too, that, you know, he got him because we all think that most people think that Nazem Kadri is much better points wise than you see right now in the point standings. But he got him at a price where he's playing with, you know, Michael Grabner. Okay, like he's getting production playing with Winnick, and like he's getting value. He's paying for Nazem Kadri based on performances with Daniel Winnick and Mike Santarelli. That's what he's getting him at. And I've been doing Hockey Central at noon every day throughout the playoffs. We had him on the program last week, and he talked about, you know, last year, you know, with, you know, the rock bottom day and getting sent home from St. Louis, or sent home from practice, rather, in that game against St. Louis. on the morning skate, and he talked about, you know, stability and pulling himself together and all that. And I couldn't help but thinking to myself, you know, for Nazem Kadri, considering, you know, he's sort of been all over the place and sort of considered scattered for a lot of people, I wonder if that's a sort of concession by Kadri that in his life right now, what he needs more than anything else is A, someone to reach out and do something for him. I mean, there are plenty of people, you know, in this market who thought that, you know, there's no way Mike Babcock or Lou Lamoriello will ever have Nazem Kadri back. I think he needed someone to reach out to him, to believe in him, and give him some stability. Give him a place where, okay, Naz, you are going to be here for 6 years, period. Mm-hmm. Like, when you're scattered and sort of all over the place and looking for stability and someone says, here, you're here, bud. Generally, you take it. The thing about Morgan Riley that grabs him right away is, and this is the brilliance of Lamoriello, is he didn't let this one drag. And what's important about not letting this one drag, for RFAs from Morgan Riley's draft year, Hampus Lindholm is about to reset the market. From that draft year, for that class of defensemen, Hampus Lindholm is going to ring the bell with the Anaheim Ducks. I talked to someone last week, which, let me give you some context. We're talking about Drew Doughty and the Norris Trophy. This is someone from an NHL team. And I said, where are you at on Drew Doughty? Okay? So where are you at on Drew Doughty for the Norris? He said, yeah, you know, I like Drew Doughty, but I don't even think he's the best defenseman in California. And I thought he'd come back at me with some Brent Burns action, with some Mark Evan Flassi. I thought it'd be like one of those hot takes.
Pickles.
And I said, who are you talking? Yeah, I said, who are you talking about? He goes, Hampus Lindholm. So when you look at what Hampus Lindholm has done, i.e., you know, pumped up Francois Beauchemin, and now Colorado's on the string for that, and what he's been able to do with that Anaheim Ducks defense, he said, it's spectacular. If you look at his underlying numbers, they are brilliant. It's funny, I said the same thing to Bruce Boudreaux a day later on Hockey Central at noon, and he scoffed. He said, hold on a second here, bump the brakes. He's not in Drew Doughty territory. But so, Hampus Lindholm is about to reset that RFA market, and he came in well under what Hampus Lindholm is getting. That's why doing it now before Lindholm reset the market was crucial. That's more lubric. And the most brilliant part of all of it, not a peep. Not a single whisper. Thief in the night. Razor blade with his accuracy and acumen. Fantastic.
So two reactions. First of all, how dare you besmirch the good name of Francois Beauchemin? He blocked shots. And as you know, the block shot is the greatest example of defensive prowess in hockey.
And as we've seen, you never get in trouble when you overpay shot blockers, Anton Volchenkov, Jay McKee, Dan Girardi, soon to be Chris Russell. Continue.
Right. And on the Kadri contract, I mean, essentially what you're saying is that you needed someone that was willing to understand Kadri. Someone who was willing to pretty much, you know, dive in and get to know him a little bit. Dive in.
I know. It's good.
The only negative thing I saw about the Kadri contract was somebody who was like, do we really want this guy to be the veteran example for younger players to come up and be like, you know what, I got all, here's the secret book I keep buried underneath the Leafs locker room. It's called Embellishment and how it can benefit your team.
He just needs to figure out how to do it better because everybody does it. Right? Yeah. That's it. And once a book gets written on you, it's tough to get out from underneath that weight. But everybody does that. Everybody embellishes. We've talked about it before. What's the line between embellishing and diving? I don't know. But everyone's out there trying to draw penalties. And as more and more it becomes a power play league, that's what everyone continues to do. I don't blame them for a second. I don't blame any player for doing it. Because you get rewarded.
He needs to go to the Ivy League of diving schools. I think the problem is that he went to Blandisi Tech. And he's pretty shitty at it.
That's what happens when you go. It's when you don't have the marks, you can't get into the Ivy School. You have to go to Blandisi Tech. What happens?
Are you interested in learning the ins and outs of diving? Well, come to Blandisi Tech. We'll show you how to flop egregiously, somersault, pretend you've been shot by a sniper in the upper deck.
Not bad. Or you can just go to the Farnham and Bailey Circus and learn how to do it more exaggerated ways.
And if, God forbid, our teaching style doesn't result in you getting penalties called on you, for you and not on you, then we'll teach you how to orchestrate a bake sale to pay for your fines.
Here's the thing, man. You know, we haven't been on for a while. We're still going over the Kadri and Riley contracts. Anyway, anything else going on? What did we miss?
We'll get to the playoff thing in just a second. Hold on. What?
I was going to say, I'm glad to see you came around on Coach's Challenge for offsides.
We'll get to that in a second. I just want to put a bow around the beginning of the show. Podcasts ain't going anywhere. And there's been, like, conspiracy theories because we got the Nerdist thing going on, me and Lozo and the whole thing. But, like, we're fine. This podcast is fine. We just needed to work out some shit behind the scenes.
How come everyone thought, okay, the minute you and Lozo started doing anything on Nerdist, all of a sudden it's like, oh, this thing's in danger. I've been doing this junior podcast for 2 years. Not a peep. Like, I've been stepping out on Wish now for 2 years, okay?
No one's ever writing me an email being like, well, what if he really just wants to talk about Red Deer? He can't talk about Red Deer with you.
Do you understand? The Rebels and the Pats are going to a Game 7. Can you believe it? And Victoria and Kelowna are going to a Game 7. First time in Victoria/Chilliwack's franchise history. Can you talk about that? No, that's why he's going there.
I can't.
That's why he's going over there.
I could use a GPS and a flashlight and a treasure map and not find a reason to care about everything you just said. But the bottom line is that we're fine.
Joe Hicketts came back. The other show's fine.
It's fine. It's just we needed to work out some stuff. And as Merrick says, talks are ongoing. The discussions, the dialogue continues, man. It's an open dialogue, man.
Dude, as Mitch Hedberg once said, I used to do drugs. I still do, but I used to too. That's the conversation's like.
All right, no guests today because we had a lot to get to. We'll talk about the offside coaches challenge bit. We'll go through every playoff series and see where we're at on all of them. We completed our prerequisite Toronto portion of the podcast, and I understand from producer Sam that there's a new intro that needs to be heard. So with that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
I just drank coconut water out of a coconut. My wife brought this home, and it was a full coconut, and I tried to just use, like, a regular, you know, knife that we have at the house. Had to end up going down into the basement to get a saw.
Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
You came so close to one of the all-time Merrick colloquialisms. You almost said, my wife came home, and I went the full coconut.
Honey, put the kids to bed. We're going full coconut tonight.
Gonna take out the saw and chop the head right off. I'm going coconut.
All
right.
Don't have to feed the geese today. We're going full coconut, baby.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Down at an English fair, one evening I was there, when I heard a showman shouting underneath the flare.
Yeah.
I bought a lovely batch of coconut.
Oh, I like that. You see, I thought he might have been going with put the lime in the coconut and drink them both up would have been the other option, I guess,
not
for
bad.
That, right?
Not bad. Yeah. Not bad. I thought you were going to bite on feeding the geese a little bit more, but that's good. That's good. That's a good one.
Well, I don't like to acknowledge that there is the Canadian geese. I prefer to think of them as North American geese. I don't like leaving Mexico out of the equation when it comes to geese.
Saw two this morning on our front yard. There's a family that comes back every year, and a family of geese that come back on our yard every single year.
Yeah.
And they're back, like, setting your watch.
Yeah, the weird thing happening down here. Like, there's absolutely no Canadian geese here between the months of April and June this year for some reason. I don't know why. I don't know if it syncs up with anything happening in the hockey world. So the headline on Puck Daddy today, NHL offside coaches challenges must die. I want to kill it with fire. It is time for all of us to acknowledge that it's a mistake. You were ahead of the curve on this, I'm willing to admit, and I will genuflect in front of your logic and your wisdom in the sense that I thought it was a good idea to get the calls right. But the more I look into it, the more the word appears out of the mouths of guys like Mike Murphy, VP of Hockey Operations, out of the mouths of guys like Stan Bowman, GM of the Chicago Blackhawks, and a pretty influential guy amongst the GMs. The word that I keep on seeing in the inception of this rule is egregious, and the less I see in all of these calls is something egregious. The Laterra call, not egregious. The Huberto call, not egregious.
Oh my God.
If we're going to wipe goals off the board for these kinds of things, I think the entire concept and thrust of making this part of the coach's challenge was misguided, because none of these are egregious. None of these are Duchesne in 2013 crossing the line a country mile before the puck does.
Yep. See, to me, philosophically too, and you know me, I'm quite content to watch hockey with a lot of mistakes from everybody, from players to coaches to officials, everybody. And I'm cool with it. It's just sort of kind of like life. I don't expect it to be perfect. I don't expect anyone playing the sport that I enjoy watching to be perfect either. But if we're going to hold this up to this impossibly high standards of, you know, millimeters, you know, judging, you know, fractions of skate blades and where they lifted and what time the puck crossed into the syncopate. You know what? Then if you're going to take that philosophically and say, well, we have to get the call right, let's do it on center ice dump ins as well, right? Because there's sort of this idea, like the old second base slide, that on dump ins, if you're close enough, yeah, we're going to give it to you. But if we really went back and, you know, took the same replay cameras and put them at center ice to watch dump-ins, how many would actually be icing?
Mm-hmm.
Plenty. And plenty of those have led to goals as well. To me, it's a question of, well, how far are you going to take it to, quote-unquote, get the call right? Given that there are mistakes and penalties and offsides and icings that happen pretty much every single shift that get missed. And you know what? It's always been that way, and it's okay. It's all right, as long as you're close enough. Like, your post is great because it nails the Matt Duchesne one. Like, that's the one you want to get out. But, you know, because you want to get that, to your point, the egregious call out, what have you done because of it? You know, you always look for, as Adawa would say, things arising mutually. Well, what has arisen mutually with trying to get that Matt Duchesne offside out? The worst possible reasons to slow down the game, and that's
right. Which again speaks to the, you know, how often do we see the Matt Duchesne play? Not all that often. I mean, that's the other issue too, is that the NHL has a very long and storied history of overreacting to a singular play or a singular moment, and this is a good example of it. Here's everything you said is true, and I'll break it down this way. Think about baseball, right? So in baseball, they've got video review for things like home runs. And they've got video review for things like plays at the plate, in which runs are scored. These are events in which nothing else but that moment is the reason a run is scored, okay? It's a tag at the plate. It's a ball over the wall. We'll review it and see what happened, okay? These are big moments that they review. They've got other reviews, but those are the big moments. A play at the plate to me is like goalie interference in hockey, okay? On a goalie interference play, it's usually a play on which, within seconds of there being a physical encounter with a goaltender, the puck crosses the line. It's not like goalie interference and then 10 seconds later, a goal is scored and you're going to call goalie interference. Goalie resets, play continues, any number of other events can happen from that time to the goal being scored. It has to be a bang-bang situation pretty much for goalie interference. Now, to me, reviewing a strike three with video review through a manager's challenge in baseball, let's say, is akin to reviewing offside. There's an entire at bat of other events that happen in which a batter could not put himself in that situation. You know, the end result is not what you want to see. Actually, it's almost like reviewing a strike one, to be honest with you, in an at bat. It's almost like reviewing strike one, because then you have the entire at bat afterwards to rectify the situation. But if strike one is wrong and then there's three more balls, well, that should have been a walk, right? So the offside is this for me. And the great example is the Huberto one in game three of the Islander series. Is he offside? Yeah, probably. He didn't maintain control of the puck in a way that you'd want him to, where by the letter of the law, he wouldn't have been offside had he controlled the puck, even if he's in the zone a little bit beforehand. But then it's 10 seconds before Ekblad scores. 10 seconds. And I counted it. You can look at the replay. Mm-hmm. There's seven chances, basically, six or seven chances for the Islanders to make a play and end the Panthers' offensive chance. Hamonic had a chance. Tavares had two. Nielsen had one. Okposo had one. DeHaan slides out of position and Barkov dances around him. And then Grice has a chance to make the save if he's in position to try to make it. So you have literally like six other opportunities to stop that goal from being scored after the offside. And the offside in that instance has such a minimal effect on what happens the rest of the way. Just because it lights the fuse doesn't mean it's the reason the bomb goes off.
Mm-hmm. There, and many people were asking this on Twitter over the past 7 days or so. Like, how long does it have to be in the zone before you say, you know what, even if it was offside, it has to wash. You just have to get rid of it. Because the one thing that I think many of us would hate is to have an entire game or a large percentage of the game audited continually. Right? Okay, the play happens, there's a whistle, now we break, and now someone goes back and watches it with a microscope to see what actually did happen and then go back and correct the calls.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you do that, you could do that for penalties. If you want to quote unquote get the call right or get the
right.
calls right. If you don't believe, and you and I have had the thing out about game management before and we're on different sides of the fence about it, but still, you could do that if you just wanted to have the perfect game. You could do that. Have every single play at every single whistle, go back and watch it again. We'll all sit there and twiddle our thumbs and game ops will come out and sell some more cookies and various products to us on the ice while the officials figure out what really happened. Part of the reason I like this game is you play, you stop, you drop the puck, and you keep playing. That's it. They're like tiny little pauses. And the puck goes in the net, and it's like death. Then you pick it up, and you go back to center ice. And then it starts again. The idea
Why don't they have
going back on replay is annoying as hell. Even, I mean, we're so in love with George Carlin did this great bit once upon a time about replay and nostalgia. It's fascinating. Go check it out on YouTube, but how sports is so fascinated with the replay and it's all wrapped up in looking back on things. And at what point do we start to feel nostalgic for things? And that continues to get shorter and shorter and smaller. I've just about had it with video review. I would like a sport without video review, without a component of video review at all.
Why don't they have t-shirt cannons during the delay? Why can't they do that? Why don't they have that? Like, I think, you know, listen, none of my rant on Puck Daddy today is about the length of time it takes for the review, although I think sometimes that's the egregious part. But why can't you just make it fun? Like, are the linesmen going to be distracted from looking at their Nintendo DS if there's somebody
Dude.
With a taco cannon in the back of them?
Dude, and then you know where we're at now? You see what John where? Cooper did yesterday with the review on the Zetterberg goal?
He ran to the back, right?
After the review?
Yeah.
Yeah, the review after the review just to try to kill the Detroit momentum that much further. Just to deaden the moment. That was not about did you get the call right or not. That was John Cooper saying, you know what? Let's really bring this whole thing to a standstill. So now we have strategic coaches challenges where it's not so much about getting the call right. It's about killing momentum. Now it's a tactic. This, thank you, Matt Duchene, Nashville. This is where we're at now. Is it a better sport because of it or a worse sport? It's nuts.
I got no problem with being a tactic though. Like fighting's a tactic. That's illegal too. Like that's fine. And you lose a timeout if you're wrong. That's fine. That means you can't challenge something later in the game. That means you can't use your timeout later in the game. That's fine. Okay, whatever.
It's late in the third.
I have a problem with a play being wiped from the memory banks of hockey when there was a missed offside 10 seconds beforehand. Like it literally had no impact other than the puck entering the zone on the rest of the play.
Okay.
Like the Islanders had every chance to not have that be a goal. They screwed up and they get a get out of jail free card because of the offside. And like Thomas Hickey said, as stupid as it is, that's the turning point in the game.
Yeah. Want to hear my fantasy show that I would love to do? Oh God, I would love to do.
Hold
this.
On, let me think. Okay, so it's you and it's Leather Chaps, and it's all the mascots from the OHL,
and they've all tied me up, and I've got a ball gag, and they're reading Gump Worsley's "They Call Me Gump" book to me. Now here's the deal. How about we create a program where we go back and audit the great goals in history, right? Tonelli to Nystrom, Henderson scores, Gretzky to Lemieux, like all the famous goals through history to see which ones are really offside. Coach's challenge on hockey history. Which goals?
Yeah, I love it.
Like, go to zone entries on all these famous goals. Which goals, by today's standard, would be called back?
I love it. I love it. Or today's standards of goalie awesome. Interference. Oh, that'd be
sure.
brilliant.
Yeah.
Please be the Bobby Orr one. Oh God, that'd be the.
Oh, the overtime with Sanderson to Orr? The yes. iconic picture that flipped through the O. Oh my God, that would be with Seattle.
That would be the greatest
great.
Thing ever. That would with be, that, that would be.
Flipping them up.
If you could point to that and say that goal would have never happened because of offside, it would be like 99% of fans would be asking for offside to be eliminated next year. It'd be the best. Or offside review.
Everybody, offsides altogether. Everyone come on my side of the equation. Get rid of the blue lines altogether. Enough of offsides. Want to get rid of coaches challenge on offsides? Get rid of offsides. Let's do it now. Here's our chance, everybody. We're so annoyed about offsides right now. We got to keep the pressure going forward and get rid of the blue lines.
Yeah. I don't like it. I don't like the fact that you see a goal scored and it's a beautiful goal, then all of a sudden it's negated by some video review. That's way too NFL for me. I'm not a big fan of that. And again, you know, I think there's a necessity for it for goalie interference. It's a very chaotic situation in the crease. Referees, giving the referees a chance to review their own work, knowing that they all have subjective, criteria for what goalie interference is to begin with. I'm fine with that. That's okay. But the offside thing.
Sort of the guys in the war room. Sort of the guys in the war room. Everybody has a subjective opinion about what goalie interference is.
Yeah. And offside is a black and white call. But then again, like Merrick said, so is interference. So is tripping. So is, a high stick. All these things are cut and dry in the rule book. Just because the referees don't always call them doesn't mean they're all of a sudden subjective. It's pretty cut and dry, and you could review those too if you wanted to. In case you didn't see it, I found this to be really interesting. So 152 goalie interference coaches challenges in the regular season. Okay, 152. 28 resulted in no goal. 121 of the 152 upheld. So in a very subjective call to begin with, the referees are looking at it and they're saying, yep, I got it right 121 times out of 152. 88 coaches challenges for offside. 35 overturned by linesmen. Now, that's the difference between black and white, cut and dry, and subjectively reviewing your own subjective work right there, I think. Like 17% overturned versus like 37% overturned.
How many minutes did that add to games is the question that I would ask. How long did all those challenges take? If we can add up the minutes, you know, he'll add up like, oh, this guy spent, 4 days in the penalty box when you look at how many penalty minutes he had over his career. How many minutes have been absorbed by coaches' challenges in this season?
I don't want to say it was a lot of minutes, but we started this show about 25 minutes. Regular season ended 5 minutes before our show. I didn't even know. There were still some games going on. They started the playoffs because they had to. They had to do it for the sponsors. But all right, speaking of the playoffs,
contractually obligated through the TV
absolutely.
Networks. Okay, yeah, let's get to some stuff. I got to punt in 20 minutes for Sirius, so let's do this.
Let's do this then. All right, so Panthers-Islanders. Saw that game in Brooklyn last night. Kudos to the Islanders fans, by the way. That place was loud as shit. Really good atmosphere. Second period of that game, of game three, was one of my favorite second periods. Favorite periods of playoff hockey I've seen this year. 2-1 Islanders. I don't think the Panthers should be in panic mode. I'm a little bit worried by the Islanders scoring 5 goals and 4 goals in their 2 victories. But what you're looking for is to come back with the kind of effort you had in game two. And I'll say this about the Panthers. Matter of time before that Jagr line takes over the series. They're cycling like nobody's business. And the Islanders, despite having successfully kept them off the board somewhat, I don't really think I have an answer for them.
Yep. And you know who stood out to me too? Much improvement over Jakob Kindle's Mike Matheson. Mike Matheson, I thought, looked really good yesterday.
Yeah,
I know he's not gonna get a lot of headlines, but I thought Matheson looked excellent.
And I think they're pairing him with Ekblad, too, which shows a lot of faith
in
both of those kids.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes, they are. That's another good one.
Peter Mrazek rises from the dead and shuts out the Tampa Bay Lightning 2-0 in Game 3. At overall, better defensive effort by the Wings.
There it is. That's it. How many shots did he have to stop? Under 20? What was the final shot? Was it 15, 17 shots? How many did Mrazek actually have to stop? Now, a couple of them are real good. Make no mistake about it. But it wasn't as if, you know, wow. 38 saves.
Peter Mrazek stood on his head and made 16 saves.
All right. Good for you. Good for you. Hey, how about that Brendan Smith hit on Paquette? Woo! It's funny too, the one thing that stands out to me about the Detroit Red Wings right now is how physical they've been since game one, right? Like the opening night, like first game, all of a sudden Red Wings are coming out and are pounding. And they get back to Joe Louis Arena, and at the end there's a big brawl, or whatever. I guess it qualifies as a brawl now in 2016. There are guys that are cross with each other on the ice in a very demonstrative way. That's what we call a line brawl now. But anyway, so it's really physical. And then we saw fights in game two, and like, the Detroit Red Wings fans were gobbling it up. Like, we kept hearing, oh, Red Wings fans are so much more above this, and they're of the skill, and all the Europeans, and Datsyuk, and Zetterberg, and Franzen, and Holmstrom, and Lidstrom, though it's a skill team, and they don't need sluggers on this team. Detroit's a blue-collar town, dude. Like, we tend to forget how much Detroit loved sluggers like Probert and Koser. Like, loved Darren McCarty. Like, that ethos still exists in Detroit. And in this series, in last game specifically, you see it coming out from big, dangerous, punishing checks to what happened at the end of the game and the final buzzer. Red Wings fans were gobbling it up. They're blue-collar hockey fans. They're wish. And as great as Detroit has been as far as skill and science has gone, still some dirt underneath the fingernails of Detroit Red Wings fans. They still like it when it gets a little bit nasty.
Yeah, don't assume they're all soft Europeans because of Zetterberg, Datsyuk, and before them, Lidstrom. But it's pretty clear that the Red Wings are only going
to... Zetterberg is ready to go. Never mind. Like, Zetterberg was cool to do it. Like, I'm not saying it's because they're Europeans. I'm just saying they like that type of hockey. It's cool. Like, we tend to forget that about Red Wings fans. I do anyway.
It's pretty clear that the Red Wings can only score 2 goals a game against Tampa Bay. So you need another defensive effort like that in game 4, and we'll see if they can get it. Capitals and Flyers, Caps 2-1, 4-1, first 2 games of the series lead 2-0. Would it shock you, Jeff Merrick, to see this series get knotted up at 2 games apiece after we leave Philly?
This may be the most emotional building we see all playoffs. Game 3 in Philadelphia, first game since the passing of Ed Snyder. There will be an outpouring of emotion and love, the likes of which we probably won't see in this year's playoffs. This is going to be, like, I'm really curious to see this crowd for Game 3. Don't you think so? And the Flyers will come out. Like, first 10 minutes, I think Washington's just got to withstand because Philadelphia is going to have, adrenaline, emotion, all of it channeling their way. If I'm Barry Trotz, I'm like, boys, we got to survive the first 10 minutes. We got to let the game settle. And Philadelphia's going to do their best not to get the game to a place where it does settle. They'll want to burn high. And Washington's going to be like, boys, put up with it for 10 minutes. Don't give them any victories. And let's let this game settle. And then it's ours. Wouldn't surprise
and
me
they're gonna,
if this thing gets knotted.
It wouldn't surprise me either. But it's going to take them getting a Holtby in a way they've not been able to. And it's going to take Steve Mason responding after giving up one of the single worst goals of the last 10 years, responding in a big way. Mason, I think right now is probably got a little bit of the ego bruise right now. He's been so damn good for them down the stretch and played every game, like fucking 12, 13 straight games, that you feel for him that now he's kind of been, mocked a little bit for giving up that goal. So I expect a good effort from him in game 3, and we'll see. I think it goes back to Washington 3-1, but we'll see what happens. Penguins Rangers, boy, this one was ready to be put in the ground, dirt kicked over it after game 1. Then all of a sudden, we were like, oh, that's right. It's Henrik Lundqvist against Jeff Zatkoff, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And tough spot for the Pittsburgh Penguins too. I mean, tough as you can make this tough. The return of Evgeny Malkin nice problem to have. I know that Grapes was, you know, said, you know, you never change a winning lineup. You're going tickety-boo. Everything's grooving. You can't put him back in the lineup. But, guy, it's Evgeny Malkin. Like, how do you keep him out of the lineup? Not that I'm going to pin anything on him or his performance in that game.
Of course not. I mean, I'm sure Grapes would have said the same thing if he was from Belleville. But no, I think you have
He did mention how he kept Brad Park out. For a number of games. While they were like he did, hey, listen, man, I had the same, and Brad Park, maybe the best defenseman to never win the Norris Trophy, I had to keep him out. So, in his defense, he said, this
was the fear about from a lot of fans about this. I mean, I know, like you said, Malkin's one of the greatest players in the world when he's on, but like it really has, they've been so locked in, that it can't help but be a little bit of a monkey wrench in the gears of this machine. Not saying it's the reason they lost. I think the reason they lost, again, is it because Henrik Lundqvist's eye swelling went down and he was able to play. But yeah, interesting series now as we kick it back to MS3. I still think it's the Penguins series to win, but the Rangers no doubt have a bit more confidence against a team that, frankly, I don't think they're that scared of. That's an important thing, too, but we'll see where this goes. Of course, the Rangers' blue line is still all kinds of banged up. Moving over to the West, Stars and Wild. Yeah,
Jamie Benn, baby. Jamie Benn, the closest thing the NHL has right now to Gordie Howe. Jamie Benn.
You really think that, huh?
I love Jamie Benn.
You don't think like James Neal is closer to the Gordie Howe aesthetic?
No, James. Well, he's a little bit nasty. But Ben can get nasty too. I just think a big, strong guy can't lift up his stick. Dotson, you know, scores. He's big on the boards. All of it. He just seems to me like a Gordie Howe kind of guy. Listen, no one's gonna ever be Gordie again. But probably the closest thing we have to in the NHL is Jamie Benn.
A lot of people are saying Dallas and five in this series. That still seems like it's where it's tracking, but it wouldn't surprise anybody if it's a sweep. This is even though game two was a one goal game, still pretty well tilted in Dallas's favor and looking very, very strong. You know, Dallas and this Nashville team we'll talk about in a bit are two teams that I looked at the beginning of the playoffs. I'm like, you know, if it's not one of the old guard, it could be one of these guys making the run. And Dallas is looking real good against an overmatched opponent, no doubt. Due to their injuries and everything else, but like looking real good, real good.
Of all the teams in the playoffs in the West, Dallas has the one with the easiest touch right now.
Yeah, for sure.
And
I don't have the stats in front of me, but if there have been studies done where most Cup champions do have that one easy peasy series. Yes. Now the Kings, of course, bucked trend pretty significant way when they've just played every series to game seven.
Didn't Boston do that in 2011 when they won the cup? Didn't every series go seven?
Something like that, yeah. So we've seen a couple of anomalies in recent years, but overall most of your cup champions have had a pretty one quickie on their way to into the cup. Blues and Blackhawks has been an amazing series so far. Everything you want.
So much fun.
Brutality and fun offense and great balls out, balls to the wall, awesome goaltending between Crawford and Elliott, all of it. And yet now we have a situation where the Blues are up 2-1. I fully expect this is going to go 2-2 back to St. Louis, but all those people saying this could be the year the Blues overcome their tormentors are starting to look pretty smart. Blues look really good in this series so far.
It was one of those series where, and I've always felt that game three is the most important game of any best of seven series. It can either make it 3-0. It can either give someone an advantage, you know, let someone jump back into a series. To me, when you look at the game threes around the NHL, did you not say game three between St. Louis and Chicago was going to be the biggest and most important game three?
Mm-hmm.
Like you get the sense too that A, if St. Louis doesn't win game one, they fold. And two, if they don't win game three, they fold as well. Like you never want to give Chicago an advantage, either an advantage in game or an advantage in the series.
Right.
Because we've just seen them close out too many times. That's why it's really crucial for St. Louis to always stay one step ahead of the Chicago Blackhawks. And they're able to do that yesterday.
This is true.
And I agree with Hitchcock. I think at the by the end of all of this, Steve Ott's going to do something, whether it's something positive, whether it's something dumb, but he will do something in this series to remind everyone that he's back.
But it's the Blackhawks making the mistakes. Patrick Kane taking a double minor late in that game in game three. And Tarasenko's looked great. And the biggest takeaway for me in this series so far, you know, what are the two questions that I've been on St. Louis radio probably 1,000 times this season, and the playoffs always come up. And I come back to two basic things. You know, who's going to score you the big goal when you need it? And do they have a goaltender that can steal you a game or steal you a series? And as good as Crawford's been, Elliott's been better. And so far, it's looking like he could steal this series. He's played outstanding for them.
He's been great. And how many times have we said Brian Elliott's done? How many times have everyone said, "Oh, Elliott, yeah, he's finished"? I know there's
especially with
Ottawa.
The emergence of Jake Allen. Especially with the emergence of Jake Allen behind him, where everybody knew what that deal was. It was like they were cheerleading for Allen to ascend to that job, and Elliott was just a placeholder.
Remember when Marty came back? Of course you do. When Marty Brodeur came back and he signed that contract with the St. Louis Blues, and Jake Allen was all like, "Wow, this is great. We got a legend on the ice. This is fantastic." And Brian Elliott's like, "Screw this. Old man's not taking my plate. Not taking my my place. No way. Not a chance. This sucks. I don't want this." Jake Allen's all fanboy, and Brian Elliott's like, "Screw that." That's what you want in a goalie. You want someone who's more defined than just like, "Wow, this is cool, man. Hall of Famer. Will he autograph my glove?"
You can't help but root for that guy. You can't help but root for a guy who was the 50th name on the phone tree for the All-Star game, and then he got his ass off the beach to come play in it. That was also a really nice moment for Brian Elliott, and I'll always appreciate that as well. Ducks, Predators, 3-2.
7 minutes. We got a punt.
Series. I know your clock.
Come on.
3-2, Preds and Duckies, in both games one and games two. I am not feeling good about Anaheim right now, my friend.
And by extension, not feeling good for Bruce Boudreau. Don't you get the sense that he's got to win the West in order to save his job? And, you know, if this is indeed the last hurrah of these Anaheim Ducks and we'll start to see trades at the end of all of it, you have to feel for what Bob Murray's going to have to go through as well.
I don't think he has to win the West, he has to win round one. I think he's toast.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. When you look at the salary that Anaheim is going to have to add, don't you need more than, you need more than one round, and don't you need a couple of rounds to justify it to ownership? Like, hey, I want to spend a lot of money that, you know, we fell flat on our faces not earning for you last year in the playoffs, boss. I don't know about that one. Listen, man, again, don't sleep on Nashville. Three lines deep, you know, big four, you know, Ryan Ellis is the sleeping giant there, and Pekka Rinne. I didn't think it was going to be a pushover by any stretch. Only question I had really was how Ryan Johansson was going to play in the postseason. Kind of had a good sense of what everyone else was going to do. I don't know, man. It feels right for Nashville. It really does. Just like it feels right for the San Jose Sharks, Greg Wyshynski.
Before we get to this horse shit, where do you see Boudreau going if he does get canned? Do you think he would end up in Ottawa? Do you think he'd go to Ottawa? I don't know why he'd want to go to Ottawa.
Ottawa would be the obvious one. We'll see what else shakes out, but Ottawa would seem to. Well, can he speak French? No. Okay. Yeah. Ottawa.
You see, I think he would be much better in that spot. I mean, if it weren't for the cultural demands of that job, like he's such the best. He's the best coach to take a team that you're kind of looking at and you're saying they're pretty good. I think, you know, with the right guy behind the bench, maybe they become really good. And I don't think Ottawa's that team.
If Montreal had Bruce Boudreau behind the bench and he did with Montreal what he did with Anaheim when he realized they needed to change the way they played based on their results, we would have probably been talking about Montreal as a playoff team right now and breaking down one of their series as opposed to just sticking with, you know, this hard and fast rule of, well, regardless whether Carey Price is in there or not, we're playing the exact same way.
Yes.
Didn't work out at all, as we all know.
And also, we play David Desharnais up on top line. He good. Like French.
And here's the thing, too. If Desharnais weren't injured, would we even be talking about Alex Galchenyuk as being the breakout star of the Montreal Canadiens with almost 30 goals? No, because he never would have had that chance. They keep talking, oh, yeah, it's great. You know, take bows for Alex Galchenyuk, you know, becoming a first line center that you always envisioned. Listen, if David Desharnais doesn't get injured, Don't flatter yourself, Montreal. You're not talking about that. And I'm not saying Montreal is in the fans. I'm talking about the coach. He can't take any bows because if Desharnais, you know, your guy didn't get injured, Alex Galchenyuk never gets that chance. So easy patting yourself on the back.
And finally, in the remaining moments we have here, Kings and Sharks. Kings down 2 Cobb. Sharks up 2-0. Bailey asked me if I wanted to make another bet, and I told him, "You idiot! This is the year I picked you guys." I don't have any answer here. The Sharks look like the better team in these first two games, and if Jonathan Quick's going to give up six goals, or is it an empty netter in one of those deals? No, it was 6 goals. If he gives up 6 goals in 2 games, he's not going to win the series.
Here's the problem.
He's got to be better
than
that.
Here's the problem. San Jose's going back home.
They can't win.
They can't win at SAP. For whatever reason, they can't win. But, I mean, you look for the breakthrough guys, the breakthrough stars. Who's really distinguished themselves? Riley Smith in the East has been a freak so far for the Florida Panthers.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
How great has Joe Pavelski been for San Jose?
And you're starting to see it. You're starting to see Pavelski and Thornton and Couture. You see and Burns. All these guys, you look at them and you're like, oh, my God, that's right. They've been through hell. They've been through playoff hell, and they've emerged from it, and it's for this. You're starting to feel like it's for this moment. And on the other side of the ice, you're starting to look at this Kings team as a team that is scratching and clawing and trying to maintain a level of glory that may or may not be there anymore. It's humbling to see, but like you said, those impressions can turn on a dime if all of a sudden the Kings rally in San Jose, which is not out of the question, but it's got to be Quick who sets the tempo.
There's a great team in Los Angeles. That's why, even though it's 2-0 way back to San Jose, I'm not saying that San Jose is coming out of this one. This series is long from being over, even though the Kings are a little bit nicked up. And to your point, the goalie's not making the saves you expect the goaltender to make. But, man, just because, mainly due to the dynamic personalities on that team, God, I want Joe Thornton to win something big. Again, I don't cheer for teams. I cheer for people, and I cheer for stories. Joe Thornton would be spectacular this year. Like, could you live with the San Jose Stanley Cup, Greg? I know I could. I know I could love it.
I could love it, too. Everybody, thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow for more. Won't be another week without us. Thanks for understanding that things happen. It's going to be
down,
fine.
Everybody.
Show's fine. Down, show's
everybody.
Fine now. Show's fine in the future. Show's fine. Thanks to producer
Show's
Sam.
Fine forever.
And we love you. Remember, Jeffy and Greg love you. That's the important thing to
right?
know.
And Buffalo draft party. I don't know what the exact date is, but sort of start to put that on your radar. That's the next big event in the MVSW calendar. It'll be the Thursday, I think, before the draft. We gotta talk to Kevin Kennedy.
Thursday! That's right. Alright, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.